Aren't you a technology supplier looking for deal flow? Then you should try our new platform, Connect. It's designed to help buyers and brands find the best tech solutions to match their campaign requirements. It's free for buyers to use and for tech suppliers to set up an account and start applying to campaign briefs. Set up your account today by visiting exchangewire.com/connect or email us at info@thewirecorp.com.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the MadTech Podcast. Our very special guest for today is Alex Khan. Now, Alex, what's your job title at Unruly? Didn't check that, did I, before we press record?
Okay, my official job title is Group MD for International Business. Effectively, I look after all of Unruly's commercial interests outside of North America.
Okay, interesting. Big job. And we'll hear a bit more about that in the second part of the podcast. Well, a very special welcome to you, because we're used to seeing you in sunny Singapore, and now you're back here in the UK. It's nice that we've got some camaraderie in the dark and the cold and the rain together. So welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And like you say, it's nice to see some familiar faces, even if one of them is Kieran's.
Can't have everything all the time. And yes, hello to my colleague and partner in crime on this particular podcast. 3 weeks in a row, listeners, aren't you in for a treat? Kieran O'Kane, ExchangeWire CEO. How's it going there, Kieran?
It's going great, Rachel. Thanks for asking. I'm absolutely delighted to be here with Alex Khan, a stalwart of the industry.
I've set myself up here now with that comment, haven't I?
Yeah, it's going to be well entertaining.
I have thick skin, don't worry, Alex. I can take it on the nose.
Right, cracking on with conversation of news of the week in AdTech and MarTech. First story I wanted to chat with the two of you about is Max Schrems putting forward a complaint about Apple's IDFA in the European courts. Now, Max Schrems is well known for bringing forward a complaint against Facebook and their practices of passporting data for their European users over to the US for security purposes. Max brought a claim against Facebook for this and said that this was not an appropriate thing to be doing under European data privacy laws, and the courts found in favour of Max as the complainant. The knock-on impact of that is that Facebook can now no longer transfer data from their European users over to the US. So now he's moved on to a different crusade, and this time it's focusing on Apple's IDFA. Specifically, he's arguing that the identifier shouldn't exist at all, because the very nature of it means that it's never privacy compliant. So simply allowing people to have the flexibility to control their privacy settings isn't enough. There needs to be an explicit opt-in under GDPR and under various other European countries' privacy frameworks. That seems like a pretty familiar argument to us. But what I was interested in was whether you two think there's any validity in this claim, given that Apple are putting forward changes to IDFA that are going to be coming down the line in iOS 14 to be rolled out early in next year. So, you know, is Max just kind of barking up the wrong tree here and creating a bit of fuss about something that will be solved effectively by Apple bringing in the requirement for all app developers to seek permission in order to read a user's IDFA? Or actually, is he uncovering something else here, that maybe Apple uses IDFA for tracking users within iOS 14 for their own purposes, whether that might be measurement or whether that might be to do with other products that they might be developing and building? Alex, what's your point of view on this story?
Yeah, I mean, I think Max is potentially going for a second bout of 15 minutes of fame. I think he's kicking the tires here. Look, if you are Apple and you are essentially saying we are going to transparently communicate with our consumers, and we're looking at them to manually enable things like the limited ad tracking, the LAT option, they're effectively saying to their users, you have control, you have the choice. Do you want ABC app to track you across your various interactions in the digital sphere? what more can they do? I'm not sure that it's I'm not sure that he or anybody supporting this understands that at a very base level, that's all anybody can do. Ask the consumer, do you want to be tracked? Do you not want to be tracked? And I think that also you need to factor in that because it's only available with iOS 14, it will take time to ramp, typically six to nine months for any form of operating system to reach critical mass of upgrade. So by the end of 21, we're probably seeing 80, 90% of Apple users in control of their data. Isn't that a good thing? Doesn't it force the rest of the industry to sit up and take notice and go, well, how do we solve these problems? And given the current messaging around data and around compliance, particularly in Europe around GDPR, doesn't it then enhance the business, the industry, and take us forwards? And I think it's somewhat of a it's making noise for noise sake. People who really understand what Apple are asking, I think, understand that it could be a precursor for good change.
That's a really good point. You know, we talk about that a lot, actually, with respect to the disappearance of third-party cookies and, in general, changes in IDFA. Kieran, I know you've got quite a vociferous point of view on this. Go ahead.
Max Shrooms, as you like to call him, Rachel, the Shroomster.
I think I accidentally called him Mark Shrooms.
Mark Shrooms, yeah, yeah.
And that is not his name. It is actually Max Shrooms.
Yeah, exactly. I think Max is probably a trust fund baby because he's bloody bored. What
got
a way
better to
time.
Do.
I mean, they're getting rid of, like, to Alex's point, they're getting rid of IDFA, right? Apple have hung a very big part of their marketing positioning on privacy and user privacy in particular. I do see this as just a know-nothing case. He's bored. Max, do something else. You already won against Facebook. We are already halfway down the road of privacy. Even your buddy, what do you call him, the Irish lad, he's gone off to do
Johnny Ryan.
Johnny Ryan's now the Irish human rights, you know, he thinks that data
advocate
is human right, blah, blah, blah. I think he's picking the wrong fight here with Apple. Yeah. I think Apple have been probably, you know, they've kept their nose clean in terms of privacy. And you know, when they think about marketing, they think about first party, they think about opt-in, right? They're not thinking about behavioral data the way that Facebook and Google are. I think he's probably better off going after Google than Apple. It just makes no sense at all. I don't know if his case hinges on the fact that nobody got an opt-in as per GDPR to use IDFA in targeting. Maybe that's what he's doing, but that seems very retroactive, and I think Apple have got a case to say, well, look, maybe they'll be soon. I just can't see, you know, a court case winning here.
But aren't Apple the kings of opt-in anyway? If you look at iTunes, yeah. You sign up, you opt in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if ever there was a global brand that to some extent is at the forefront of protecting their consumers' data, it would be Apple.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm giving Apple an A plus here.
Yeah, okay. And so one final question I've got for both of you on this, which is a little bit separate to the user privacy issue, is that there's been an argument that Apple sort of, you know, killing, I'm using air quotes here, because actually, you know, there's many reasons why they might legitimately want to change IDFA for the benefit of the user. But from the cynical point of view, Apple killing IDFA is pushing those app developers that would ordinarily make money off, targeted advertising revenue into trying to find other ways to make revenue, which could be in-app purchases. And Apple gets a significant cut of that via their commission, you know, fee structure within the App Store. Is that an overly cynical point of view? Do you think that Apple's motivated to make these changes to IDFA, not just for the purposes of user privacy, but also because it gives them a bit more of an advantage in making money out of App Store commissions?
I think given the history that Apple have of policing the App Store, and given our previous point where we've just highlighted the fact that they are probably at their core very protective of their consumers' data and how that's used, certainly by third parties outside the Apple ecosystem, I'm not really seeing a huge issue with it.
Yep. Kieran?
You are a consumer that is choosing to engage in iTunes where you've signed up and you know for what you're getting into, and you're downloading an app that you want to use. Isn't that the perfect solution, or near as?
Yeah, I guess I'm just interested in their, you know, in where that puts app developers who are trying to monetize their apps.
There'll be ways to monetize the advertising. Like, this is, I mean, this is just an evolution. We move away from a lazy way of working, which was cookie based or ID based, and we'll go into a privacy first world. So, you know, there'll be a bit of pain, but generally speaking, these apps will still be able to use advertising. Whether Apple have their own ad business. I mean, at the end of the day, it's Apple's platform. I mean, that's the reality. Like, you can't. They've built an ecosystem over the last, you know, 30, 40. How long are they going? 30 years. So, you know, I just think us crying wolf about, oh, they're forcing this and that. They're doing what Apple does best. You know what I mean?
I guess I was just coming from an anti-competition point of view. Are they using a mechanism to push app developers into having to monetize their apps via in-app purchases, off which they make a commission fee? But I mean, I think what you're both saying is maybe they might be, but ultimately they're putting users first.
To that extent, though, Rachel, by tearing up IDFA and going with LAT, they are essentially pushing people who want to work on the status quo for advertising solutions to a number of other options. And there are plenty of options to do audience-based targeting for advertisers, but they're also, I'm not sure how it can be anti-competitive, because the simple solution is you push your ads to Android.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
And then you do the battle with, do I want all my data being circulated around the Android ecosystem?
Do I want to miss out on the richest segment in the world by not advertising on Apple?
Yeah,
exactly. You know, they have an ecosystem that, you know, is, you could argue people pay for the Apple brand, one, because of the great brand marketing, but two, because of the level of safeties that it brings.
Yeah.
But if you target these people, you can target them other ways. You know, you can target them contextually. You can target them through Nielsen DAR. You can target them through their apps on the CTV connection.
Yeah, we'll work our way around this. It's not the end of the world. Max, go back to doing something else.
Yeah. Max, your 15 minutes is up.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Speaking of time, let's move on to the second story. So I wanted to talk about ad tech and the public stock market, right? So ad tech companies...
Stock market only goes up, Rachel. Only goes up.
You've been watching too much Bloomberg TV
up,
here.
Up.
I think you watched The Wolf of Wall Street.
That too. That's on regular rotation, I'm quite sure.
As far as I can see, it only is the only way to make money.
Right.
0% rates, no cash.
Bearing that in mind, ad tech looks like it's having a good time in the stock market at the moment. The IPO that I wanted to draw your attention to in particular was a company named Media Alpha, who launched what they refer to as a direct-to-quote platform for insurance verticals. So they incorporated a programmatic advertising platform within their platform that enables people to submit their information once and get a number, a variety of insurance quotes across providers. So they IPO'd at the end of October, and their stock has been performing really well ever since. We know that there's some other high-profile ad tech companies that are getting close to IPO. So PubMatic filed their S1 on Friday last week, which is really interesting. And we've heard rumours about another couple of very well-known ad tech companies preparing themselves for IPO. I'm not going to mention who, because Kieran will no doubt be gossiping with people behind the scenes. So probably everybody's already got an idea of who we think that's going to be. My point here is that... it feels like the stock market's responding well to some of these ad tech solutions that, as companies, are, you know, achieving a couple of critically important things. The first is profitability, and the second is technology solutions that are either operating in verticals that are not quite entirely disrupted yet, or they are applying technology solutions in an environment that's helping those verticals and those industries to digitize faster. So what I mean by saying that is that Media Alpha have been very sort of transparent about how their platform is completely disrupting what is otherwise considered a very traditional industry, insurance. So it's not just price comparison, because there's plenty of price comparison sites out there. It's also actually using data and machine learning to try to match the best quote with the best customer, and using a programmatic platform off the back of that as well. And, other well-known ad tech companies looking to IPO, the ones that I've got in my mind, are also profitable and are applying their technology solutions perhaps in verticals that are still kind of growing and becoming digitized. So if we think about what PubMatic's been up to over the last sort of 12 to 18 months, they'd be getting much more, doubling down much more in mobile, getting interested in TV. So is this the stock market responding to ad tech well, because ad tech companies have been adapting themselves and applying themselves in new verticals and refining their technology solutions and the way they're managing and running their companies to become more compelling propositions? Alex?
I think there's no doubt that there is a lot of ad tech companies have been forced to reevaluate their businesses and look at how they can generate shareholder return, private shareholder return pre-IPO, but also how they can service their clients. Ultimately, as an ad tech company, you live and die by your clients and the level of repeat business and the level of new business that you win as a vendor in a very competitive ecosystem. And you look at the market factors. There's several market factors that have caused the ad tech companies to, kickstart this renaissance period, and not least the pandemic, because you look at how people are able to engage digitally and what they're doing digitally. So those of us and those brands and companies that invested in things like cross-format ecosystem, omni-channel delivery, CTV, in-app mobile, 18 months, 2 years ago, are now beginning to see the dividends of that. Now, is that smart play and is that an element of luck? Of course, everyone needs a little bit of luck. But we're in a position now where you have companies who are beginning to realize that the whole growth of direct-to-consumer, you need some ad tech to take advantage of that. The e-commerce websites, you need to be able to compete with e-commerce websites, particularly if you're traditional bricks and mortar. You don't want to put your shop on the likes of Amazon. So you want to be able to clear products. Kickstarted the direct-to-consumer marketplace. So those of us who are able to provide safe ecosystems, direct-to-consumer, where brands can interact and trade and bridge that gap between being a traditional business and a fully digital business, are the ones that are instilling confidence and the ones that are generating profit and the ones that are able to grow and show investment in the ecosystem. And those are the ones who are now beginning to realize that in order to take the next stage, please see our earlier conversation around how do we ensure that we embrace universal ID, for example, ACR data? How do we keep evolving? Some of them are going to have to go to market to raise cash. And what better time to do it when you've shown very healthy returns and very healthy growth charts in a pandemic time? So I think timing is probably the third key element to it.
Yeah.
There's foresight, there's a bit of luck, and there's timing.
Yeah. Great summary. Kieran?
Everybody should go public. And here are the reasons why, right? So someone told me this yesterday, which I found very interesting. So the companies on the NASDAQ and the, on NASDAQ predominantly, ad tech companies are doing very well, right? So look at the Trade Desk. It's nearly worth 30-odd billion, right? They've got LiveRamp, Cardlytics, Media Alpha, Roku, Unity, Magnite, there is Criteo. There is a ton of ad tech that is doing very well. Now, the reasons are very interesting, right? To Alex's point, one, ad tech is doing very well because it's profitable, right? Alex's parent company, Tremor, are a public company listed on the AIM. I think they're undervalued, to be honest with you. They're up 35% this year. That's pretty good. And they're very profitable. I actually think they're undervalued because their revenue is exceeding their actual market cap, which I think is crazy. Alex, you need to, you know, you need to relist in the US, I reckon, because you get better value for your company. But someone told me yesterday, which is very interesting, Rachel, that there is 50% less stocks, public stocks, available in the US than there was nearly 10 years ago, right? So, as I said, right, it's not even about the quality and the innovation and the scalability of ad tech. It's actually just a supply and demand thing, right?
Volume.
Right. Think about it this way. There is so much money on the sidelines. You've got all these baby boomers who are retiring, right? And they want their money to put their money to work. Where do you put your money at the minute, right? You can't put it in a bank account because everything's at 0%. So your money gets eaten by inflation. You can't put out the bonds because there's no yield on bonds. There are no other financial mechanisms where you make money. And the stock market is the only way to make money. And there's a dearth of companies on publicly listed companies everywhere in the world, right? So ad tech, actually, look at PubMatic's a good giant. They're going public because they have decent financials. They have a decent business. It's growing. So going public, it probably increased the value because there's appetite for public stock. Because the stock market is going up. That's where all the money's going. So it's a great time to go public if you're an ad tech company who has profitability, right? Obviously, if you're making a loss, it's going to be a bit more difficult. But people like DoubleVerify, who obviously it's public knowledge, they're looking to go IPO as well at a $5 billion valuation, which is fairly punchy for an ad verification company. But that just shows you the appetite that is out there. I think it's great. I think it's healthy. I think that to Alex's point, you then get the ability to raise capital to innovate. Like, you know, Google and Facebook and Amazon haven't won everything, right? They may have won their own ecosystem, but as Alex said, there's CTV and there's out of home and there's audio, there's ID, there's the whole gaming ecosystem, there's VR, there's the metaverse. Like, the opportunities are huge, right? And four companies don't need to control all of it. And the stock market is a good means to access capital, particularly from individual or retail investors, not even from institutional investors, but from retail investors. And I think that's where the rubber hits the road, right? You know, that's why Media Alpha has a fecking valuation of $2.5 billion. Like, it's an insurance vertical ad network. Like, you strip it out, that's what it is. Catalytics is a
verticals. The verticals are on the march for sure. Specialization is key, and investors understand it. Investors understand that we're really good at this one thing. And you know who trailblazed that? Trade Desk trailblazed that.
Yeah.
They only wanted to be a DSP, and that's all they wanted to be. Now they're branching out into all sorts of other things, but they've cut their cloth and they've made their rep and they've a solid stock. Now other people are beginning to learn from that model. And, you know, also I think we'll see a lot of consolidation. You go to market, you raise money. What do you raise money for? Well, as Kieran and I have said, you've raised money for R&D, you've raised money for expansion and innovation. You raise money for acquisitions as well.
Yeah, because you could grow the top line revenue. You know, you've got to grow, you know, and you need to buy more companies. But this space is so, there's so much opportunity, right? You know, there's a lot of money consolidated, concentrated into like legacy businesses like TV and radio, right, which are going digital. And then, as Alex said, there's the whole opportunity around commerce, right? So commerce and advertising becoming intertwined. So that's another opportunity for ad tech and martech. So, you know, we're talking about a decade-long opportunity here. Like, you know what I mean? There's going to be so much. Like, and to a point, like, there's things like the metaverse, which is gaming's, like, you know, new ecosystem that could be absolutely massive. So I think we only starting out here. Like, everything gets burnt down and rebuilt, so there's opportunities to make money. And the public markets have suddenly a love affair with ad tech. I think we need to start an ETF of ad tech companies.
Well, like you say, if you deliver strong results and you show the trend, and let's face it, the world is now talking about the continuing booming of esports, the evolution of cross video screens culminating in being able to go everywhere from in-app to connected TV, the message is going to hit home. And as Kieran said, those who have cash that they need to invest in sort of return on, there's only certain places where you can keep buying. And once share prices become so high that they no longer provide the annualized return that some investors want, where do they go? Well, they have to come out of their safety zone and go to a little bit higher risk. higher risk is ad tech, but the returns are way bigger. The prices can drive, as Kieran alluded to, you can be up 30, 40, 50% in the space of 6-9 months.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting that kind of like feeds into this is that the strategic buyers are becoming, condensed. They're becoming thinner in the ground, right? We've had the likes of Verizon who dipped a toe into ad tech, AT&T, and they've kind of like gone off it, right? So, you know, PubMatic probably rightly look around and said, who's going to buy us, right? Well, nobody. But we've got good runway here to grow, and there's a public market. A public market
that's lots of other things that they can achieve. Yeah, totally get it. So, I mean, this is a fascinating conversation. We could like consume another at least 10 minutes on it, but we'll have to move on. But the one final question I wanted to ask then, from both of your points of view, anyone that you have in your mind that you think should be IPOing that you've not heard anything about? As in you've not heard any confirmed rumours that they're looking to IPO?
Well, Double Verify, that's pretty much out there because it was...
That's in the public domain, right?
Just in your opinion.
It's been mentioned in a couple of pieces. Triple Lift are another one as well, I think, are looking at because their numbers are pretty decent. But is there any ad tech companies who are private? I mean, there's a lot of ID companies, but I think...
I was just about to say, what about the ID layer? Do you think those companies should IPO?
No, I think some of them are going to basically look for strategic homes. I think, if you think about Zeotap, right, who've raised another big round. If I was SAP, I'd just buy them because SAP have a serious problem on the MarTech side.
Oracle.
One or the other. I think all those ID companies are teeing up for an exit from a strategic. But, like, sort of media-based ad tech, who are growing and have revenue, I just don't see any strategies coming in for them. So, a public market listing would be a pretty decent exit for them, potentially.
Yeah.
I think, Rachel, to Kieran's point, companies out there have learned from the experience of, and I've learned firsthand, as you two well know, the experience of Verizon getting involved in media companies. AT&T, they're not having a great time with their acquisition. There's all sorts of conjecture around that. So what road do they have? It's, okay, let's try and forge ahead and do it on their own. And to do it on their own, the one thing that everybody knows about ad tech companies is you need cash. It's a very cash-heavy investment business. So you have to look at how do we do that? Now, it's either going to be strategic acquisition or it's going to be let's go public and raise. But that's not necessarily the solution that suits everybody because there's plenty of companies who have gone public and found it hasn't worked out too well for them.
It can be a double-edged sword, but I guess there is a template now to sort of a rule book that you can use to grow.
I think the community sites as well, there's going to be some action in the community sites.
What do you?
Well, I think one of those,
like the likes of Reddit or...
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I think they are ripe to go public.
Interesting.
Everybody should go public.
Exactly. Everyone should go public. You've heard it here first, and the next 10 years, the next decade is going to be an interesting, exciting time in ad tech.
The next decade, the next 10 months is going to be a roller coaster.
Well, 10 weeks, frankly. Okay.
Ringing the bell soon enough. Can't wait to see that.
Okay, final story of the week. I wanted to make reference to Brian Weezer's marketing monitor for last week. So Brian Weezer, data analyst for GroupM, puts out some really interesting, quite detailed stats on what's happening in the world of marketing and advertising. And he does, he undertakes quite detailed research, so they're always interesting. I wanted to pick up on his monitor for last week because he talked a lot about Q3 results and what direction they were heading in comparison to Q2, which, of course, all gives us a little bit of an indication of maybe where the world of advertising and marketing is heading. I hesitate to say beyond the pandemic. But anyway, that's exactly where I'm going with all of this. So just a couple of key points that he noted, which is that growth is improving in the UK. It's still slow, but it's significantly improved in Q3 from Q2. However, it doesn't look as good in the UK as it does in the US. So US growth recovery was a lot faster than it was in the UK. In particular, he pointed to challenges remaining in the UK around uncertainty associated with Brexit. So it's not just an environment where, you know, businesses and in the world of marketing and advertising, brands are just trying to negotiate their way through the pandemic. It's also lots of concerns about what a post-Brexit UK is going to look like and what that will do to consumption. Consumption is still down, but again, having improved. And household spending is up massively. So he points to all of those indicators suggesting that, you know, if we are going to go into a period of recovery next year, then the UK is in quite a good position. If household saving is up and, you know, consumer growth has been low, then we've got quite a good base from which to accelerate. Let's see whether that comes to fruition. He, of course, mentioned the universal global growth in e-commerce, that the pace of growth in Q3, significantly slower in Q2, which is to be expected. It was quite an explosion in Q2 and it's sort of settled down a little bit in Q3, but it's provided the basis for a lot of e-commerce players, whether that's traditional pure play e-com, whether that's direct to consumer, whether that's traditional retail that have kind of got an e-tail offering, are all starting to feel quite confident about continued growth in numbers for Q4 and beyond into 2021. And he also reports to improving trends in TV, because this was a really interesting place to focus on at the beginning, in the early days of the pandemic, is what was happening to the world of TV advertising. Took a nosedive in Q2 and has made quite a solid recovery in Q3, such that overall quite a lot of TV providers, and this is in the US, the UK and elsewhere in Europe, he's mentioning specifically US broadcasters, but also ITV here in the UK and Mediaset in Italy and RTL, which covers Germany and France, are all pointing to very small and slow but steady recovery in Q3 and predictions for things to improve yet again in Q4 from the advertising point of view in terms of advertising revenue, such that they're ending up in 2021 with not as much of a significant loss as was first anticipated. So I'm interested in your perspectives on these. I know it's very, in terms of where we're going to go next, it's very finger in the air and it's quite a sort of a vulnerable position that we're all in at the moment, but I'm really interested to hear what your thoughts are on that. And I'm going to start with you, Kieran, on this one.
Well, you start with me. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Interesting.
I mean, I can actually just delete you from the call altogether if you prefer.
The most interesting thing I have to say around that is the commerce part, right? The agencies are throwing, like, you know, Brian's obviously there to wax lyrical about statistics, but really it's just there to kind of promote what WPP are doing, right? And one of the things...
Quite possibly.
Well, it's impossible. It's 100%. That's why he was hired by them. The most interesting part there is the commerce part. I just think that is such a huge opportunity for not just the agencies. The agencies are going to throw themselves at it because they see huge opportunities around optimizing for Amazon, optimizing for Shopify, and probably where they can grow their business, because obviously they've always depended on the brand part of it, right? You know, TV, traditional spend. Now they have to get to sort of like outcomes, and e-commerce is a good way to prove your value, right? Give me your money, I will build an Amazon strategy, a Shopify strategy, and we can then join up the brand spend to outcomes. And I think that for me, though, when he's done those reports, the commerce thing always is the one thing that's popped out to me. That's a huge opportunity, not just for the agencies though, also for ad tech, right? I'm seeing more and more companies go into that space. You see specialist Amazon companies, and a lot of ad tech companies are now thinking about how they can get e-commerce into that conversation. So it's a fascinating that for me, always that stat from his report always makes me think. They're always thinking about commerce, right? And then you hear about an agency unit set up or rolled out to sort of address that. So yeah.
And I suppose just to give some, in terms of stats, what he quoted was that e-com was up globally 50% in Q3 compared with 70% in Q2. So these are enormous exponential rates of growth, right? Yeah. So no wonder it's a standout. And, you know, of course, this has just been so directly fueled by the way consumer behavior has changed during 2020. you know, it would be impossible to believe that's not going to be sustained into 2021. Alex, what do you think?
No, I think the trend is there, and I think that Kieran raises a good point. Commerce is look, the train's left the station on that. It's never going to slow down. It's only going to accelerate. And it's good. It will drive innovation. And as we alluded to earlier on, it will drive consolidation as companies look to try and get involved in the commerce space or take advantage of the commerce space. And indeed, we've already said some examples of companies who will think, actually, I can do this on my own. I'll IPO and raise the money to continue a certain level of independence. I think that whole commerce ecosystem is only going to expand. Look, Amazon have just launched their online pharmacy. That's another route to them. They've got their online grocery. They haven't even really flexed their muscles around their media business unit yet, and it's, what, a couple of billion a year already. So you're going to find that there are a lot of complementary businesses, competitive businesses that try and live and feed off that big fish ecosystem. But in terms of the pure media element, you have to look at the timing of this as well. The US has just gone through a major election where there was a ton of money floating around trying to push various Democrat and Republican messages. And that led to a very healthy Q3. Plus, off the back of that, they had probably little or no COVID restrictions. So in an advertising world, you were still pushing ahead. You were still being able to entice consumers to interact with your brands, either firsthand or over e-commerce. In fact, you had the double whammy. You could get to them in both ways. So I think we have to look at that in terms of a global yardstick. And then you look at the UK is, yes, it did follow that trend, but in a much more watered-down way than in a typically British reserve way. There's still a lot of wait-and-see options that are being explored in the market. And is the trend up? Yes, it will. Will it continue? I think it's more tactical outside the US. Who knows with the US now that Biden is hopefully going to get sworn in on the 20th. We look at how do we work how do we provide enough flexibility to take advantage of these opportunities that come our way?
Yeah. And I mean, again, we're in the world of impossible predictions here, but it just feels like positive vaccine news is compounding. It certainly has over the last, what, 1 or 2 weeks. Is that going to just continue to drive confidence, both from a consumer spending point of view and also from an advertiser's point of view? Are we going to see an uptick as a result? Again, I guess it depends on, you know, what happens next, and what we're expecting to happen next, at least here in the UK, is a vaccination program to be rolled out from the beginning of December onwards. Of course, it will be tiered. It's not going to be, you know, wide-scale vaccination of everybody, but it is going to change things a bit, right? It's going to change people's sense of confidence.
Sure. Absolutely, it will change the sense of confidence. But one thing it will really change is potentially what's it going to do for the logistics business? Yeah. Because you're talking about getting an entire nation vaccinated with multiple different organizations and departments involved. Depending on which vaccine you have, it's a two-step process with 1 month apart from the injections. So the whole logistical organization on that it has to be looked at. So is it going to be something that happens in the next month to 3 months? Not on a huge scale. It can't be. It has to be organized. People have to be checked. People have to be, the whole process, the whole procedure has to be formalized. And then it has to be checked off to say, yes, we have covered the right amount of the nation. So, but who's to say that there isn't somebody in the room out there, bright spark, who says, hey, I can build something to do this and make it a lot easier. This is one of the upsides of working in an industry like ad tech or martech that enables people to innovate. And rather than reinvent the wheel, it's adapt the wheel, or it's take what we have. You know, for example, if I'm a winemaker, I make gin. If I make gin, I can make antiseptic soap, right? There's spin-offs everywhere, and I think that's the problem we'll have.
Well, and, you know, I mean, who's best placed to make some of those kind of, to take advantage of some of those infrastructure spin-off opportunities? But we were talking about it last week here on Amazon, right? Like I was reading something about how Amazon's not just getting engaged in last mile delivery anymore. In the US, they're actually performing that middleman delivery. So they're actually now owning the delivery and freight routes in between. So they're not just doing only last mile. So you could imagine, you know, and Kieron's obsessed with the idea that Amazon's taking over the world. You could imagine them inserting themselves. They're already in the UK delivering tests to people's houses. So they've provided a key piece of that testing infrastructure.
Amazon is the new Noble Group, end to end, in everything they touch.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Right, I'm going to move us on to the second part of the podcast, and which is a chat with you, Alex, about what you've been up to at Unruly. So tell us a little bit about what you've been focusing on there. And also, I wonder if you can throw in something about reflections on life in ad tech back in the UK versus Singapore, even if you've been confined to your home in the lovely East Sussex countryside the entire time that you've been back in the country.
Yeah. Okay, so really what I've been focused on, pretty much ensuring that the transition from what was effectively a single stack, single creative business focused on Outstream as part of a huge corporation in News Corp, and managing the transition of that from that established business unit to what is now effectively a unified platform, omni-channel cross-video format solution provider or SSP. And we work on a number of business models. We can do it managed, we can do it self-serve, we can do it working with third parties. And it's managing that process, that evolution and the messaging to market that's really taken up my time for the last 4 to 5 months. Once we established what the migration roadmap was, once we established how we were going to execute, we really then had to get that message to market very quickly to our partners and to our clients to understand that there was going to be a significant shift change. It was no longer looking at, oh, if we have this creative execution, we can work with Unruly. We're trying to change that mindset to actually now it should be, we have a video campaign, we should work with Unruly. Oh, and by the way, we also have a ton of access to display as well. So, and it's getting that message across, the fundamental message of we were a video first platform built for video and connected TV that has retrospectively brought display in. Whereas everyone else, if you think about it, evolutionary has been display gone to video. So we have the ability and we have the skills and we have the scale and we have the expertise. And it's really been getting that message into market. And to address your second part of the question, the fundamental difference in working in the ad tech system or ecosystem in the UK and Europe as opposed to APAC, firstly, it's a lot cooler here, so you can walk to meetings if we were allowed to have meetings in person. And secondly, there is a difference in terms of what I would call 360-degree knowledge. It's a more vibrant, it's a more advanced, it's a more experienced ecosystem in the UK and Europe. And there is a willingness to, because of that level of experience and understanding and the size of the opportunity, you're dealing in much more complex and bigger discussions around how you engage with clients and what it is that they expect to get in return, as opposed to scratching around for small test budgets to try and prove yourself against, you know, well-established partners who don't necessarily work as hard for the money.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, you know, that sounds like a particular piece of APAC experience, exactly that. Not a lot of budget dedicated to, you know, to people who aren't major players. And so the major players dominate and that makes it much harder for the smaller independents. What about, you know, do any of your colleagues kind of look to you to bring some sort of APAC knowledge to the table on things like emerging markets or, you know, trends that we know that have been very APAC first? So anything to do with mobile and potentially even gaming?
Yeah, certainly, particularly around mobile and esports, which is huge in the US, but obviously very big in APAC. Some of the teams in APAC, you know, Tokyo, Soul are just so well funded, and you could it. I remember about 12-13 months ago, there was a game between the two teams, and they had 80,000 people in a stadium watching screens, watching these kids play the game live, and you just knew that it was gonna snowball. So couple that with the APAC mobile first mentality, you can bring some of those ideas and some of that knowledge and some of those understandings into a I'm not going to say more traditional, but a marketplace like EMEA that uses more a wider variety of channels. And you begin to understand how we can refine and how we can provide a better service in a more in a faster way.
Yeah, yeah, great. And do you think you're going to take Kieran's suggestion, back to your colleagues about how Tremor Video should be IPOing?
They're already listed. They're listed in the AIM. I think they should relist in the NASDAQ.
Sorry, yeah.
He wants us to relist
go to another
NASDAQ.
Stock exchange. Sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, but Kieran, when I look at the forex rates, really, I mean, I think all we got to do is loosen up the make it more liquid, and then we're sitting pretty trading in pound sterling.
What do you mean?
Well, you're saying that there's a constrained level, you know, in that the revenue is over the optimization. That's because of the ability and the availability of being able to transact on the shares. So I think that if we focus on making it available to everybody or to a wider degree of investors.
More retail investors to get involved. I agree. I think that it's very heavily geared towards institutional investors, and that's probably why the American market is a bit more, it's a bit more scaled because you got the retail investor. Right? Is that a case for like the main? Because you're on the AIM. Is the main stock exchange the same as well? Because I'd say very few, well, I'd say not many people in the UK are trading equities or have equities.
I don't know, you know. I think what has changed or what I've noticed changed is if you'd have asked me before I went to Asia 14 and 15 years ago, I would have said it's a very traditional way of trading. You do it through a specialist broker or you do it through your bank's broker, etc. Whereas now today you've got apps like eToro where everybody can just go and just trade and become a day trader, and they can read up on the internet and understand what they're doing and find out all the information they want. So I think it's a case of it's accessible. It just needs to be, I think we just need to look at how it's accessible to a wider group of people.
Right. Yeah. So what you're saying is me and you should go into investment relations.
Buy
ad tech.
Exactly.
I'm seeing an opportunity here to start up our own ad tech Bloomberg style channel with you and Kieran.
Imagine
talking
seven stocks per day.
I reckon we could give Motley Fool a run for his money, Kieran. We could definitely take on Motley Fool.
Amazing. Listen, we've run out of time. Thank you very much, Alex. It was delightful.
Alex's dog's still mad in the background.
Alex's dog needs to be taken out for a walk. Thanks very much, Kieran. You've got to run off and get back to Bloomberg TV and, sharpen up your stock prediction skills. Thank you very much, guys.
I've got a delivery man at the door. Thanks very much, guys. Enjoyed it immensely. I look forward to catching up when we're allowed to see each other.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody. And thanks for listening. That was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.
Here at Exchange Wire, we spent the past few months building a new platform called Connect. It helps buyers and brands find the best tech solutions for their media campaigns. It's free for buyers to list their campaign requirements and for tech suppliers to set up an account so they can get connected to buyers. Find out more at exchangewire.com/connect or by emailing info@thewirecorp.com.